Rava Kanjavihari Jaya Rama 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 Kanjavihari Gopi
Probably Lamita. Keith was cooking lunch in the kitchen as usual, but today Swamiji was standing by the kitchen stove, watching his pupil. Keith paused and looked up from his cooking. Swamiji, could I become your disciple? Yes, Prabhupada replied. Why not? Your name will be Krishnadas. This simple exchange was the first request for discipleship and Prabhupada's first granting of initiation. But there was more to it than that. Prabhupada announced that he would soon hold an initiation. What's initiation, Swamiji? One of the boys asked. And Prabhupada replied, I will tell you later. First they had to have beads. Keith went to Tandy's Leather Company and bought half-inch wooden beads and cord to string them on. It was much better, Swamiji said, to count on beads while chanting. A strand of 108 beads, to be exact. This employed the sense of touch. And like the Vaishnavas of India, one could count how many times one chanted the mantra. Some devotees in India had a string of more than 1,000 beads, he had said, and they would chant through them again and again. He taught the boys how to tie a double knot between each of the 108 beads. The number 108 had a special significance. There were 108 Upanishads, as well as 108 principal gopis, the chief devotees of Lord Krishna. The initiates would be taking vows, he said, and one vow would be to chant a prescribed number of rounds on the beads each day. About a dozen of Swamiji's boys were eligible, But there was no strict system for their selection. If they wanted to, they could do it. Steve, although I was already doing whatever Swamiji recommended, I sensed that initiation was a very heavy commitment. And with my last strong impulses to remain completely independent, I hesitated to take initiation. Prabhupada's friends saw the initiation in different ways. Some saw it as very serious, and some took it to be like a party or a happening. While stringing their beads in the courtyard, Wally and Howard talked a few days before the ceremony. Wally, it's just a formality. You accept Swamiji as your spiritual master. Howard, what does that entail? Wally, nobody's very sure. In India, it's a standard practice. Don't you think you want to take him as a spiritual master? Howard, I don't know. He would seem to be a good spiritual master, whatever that is. I mean, I like him and his teachings a lot, so I guess in a way he's already my spiritual master. I just don't understand how it would change the situation. Wally, neither do I. I guess it doesn't. It's just a formality. This is the first. I mean, you can see just how we're coming from out of nowhere everybody is at the time. We're still basically in the same condition, but now there's a lot of, now so many of devotees have been initiated and for a long time and so many initiations, and now there's all kinds of formalities and rules and regulations and an extended time period before you can take initiation. And that's all good. That's all good. But in the beginning, especially, nobody knew. What's initiation? I don't know. I guess it's just a formality. I guess it's just something. It's just something you do. It's like a party or a happening. Nowadays, they have like flash mobs where everybody gets together from contacting on social media or something. But back then, it was called a happening, when everybody, all of a sudden, there was something going on that was like really unique or far out. They called it a happening. And so now of course it's much more formal. But in the beginning, Prabhupada knew who he was dealing with, and he knew nobody knew anything. But it didn't matter. He was just trying to start something on behalf of Krishna and his spiritual master, and he had faith that if he just did everything in the standard way, and after all, everyone is a pure spirit soul, whether they know what initiation is or not, whether they know who Krishna is or not, whether they know anything or not, everyone is a pure spirit soul. So if they just follow the standard practices, then everything will come in due course of time, naturally. And that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. And what's still happening today. It's like when a kid, a baby is born. Baby doesn't know how to do anything. Can't walk, can't talk, can't do anything. If he puts something in his mouth, half of it goes all over his face. And he just drops it on the floor. And he doesn't know anything. But as time goes on, it's innate in him. He will learn all those things very naturally and easily. So Prabhupada knew that it would be like that with us. And so, Janmashtami Day, September 8th, Janmashtami Day. Oh, and I talk about this. Steve said, he was already accepting Prabhupada, Swamiji, and doing whatever he told them to do, but he knew, he could feel that, initiation was like a really big step. He wasn't thinking, oh, it's a party or something, or it's not just a formality. He was thinking more seriously or a little more understanding that it's like a really serious thing. And he was rebelling a little. He said, I hesitated to take initiation. With my last strong impulses to remain completely independent, I hesitated to take initiation. And I know just in my own case, I became serious about Krishna consciousness when I was 18, but it was 5 years before I moved into the temple, even though I knew immediately that I wanted to be a devotee, that I had to be a devotee, that's all I could do. I didn't want to do anything else, but you know, I'm still trying to hold on and keep my independence. It didn't work out very well because there was a lot of suffering along the way. And when I did move in the temple, and then 6 months later, it was sort of almost automatic that after 6 months of living in the temple, you would take initiation, unless there were, you know, you were doing something really off, and then it wouldn't be recommended. But pretty much it was almost automatic that you, the temple president, would recommend you for initiation. And so I was going for initiation after 6 months, the day after Ratiyatra in New York City in 1976. And big initiation, big, huge fire sacrifice in the New York temple. It was a huge temple room, like probably, I don't know, 6 times bigger than this room, this temple room. I don't know. It was big, high ceiling, and pillars in it, and everything. A huge altar, and there were like 400 devotees in there because it was the day after Ratiyatra, and Prabhupada was there, and there was hundreds of devotees. It was a really hot day, and it was huge fire. Not a huge fire, but not this a little fire, like this, but like a big fire. In the middle, and it was already like 90 degrees in the temple room. With 400 people, it was like 100 degrees. And when, with the fire, it was like 120. It was hot. And I was in there were 75 devotees taking initiation. And this was almost exactly 10 years after the first initiation in New York City. And things had changed a lot. But And I was in like the front row, like 5 feet away from the fire. So it was really hot, and the sweat's pouring off you, and everybody's standing in back of you. And part of the ceremony is everybody has a paper plate with sesame seeds covered in ghee, and every time it's like, you know, a couple hundred people with, and every time the priest says swaha, everybody takes a handful of sesame seeds and throws them in the fire, but they don't reach the fire. Most of them are landing on the people in the front row, so you're like sweating, it's super hot, and you're covered with sesame seeds and ghee. And it was, yeah, but that was the fire sacrifice. And then afterwards, when they're giving out the beads and the names, they call you up one at a time. And when they were getting close to me, I knew, I forget how I knew, but I knew there was some system they were going by, and I knew they were getting close to me. And I was thinking, oh boy, oh, this is really heavy. Oh, here it comes. I'm going to get initiated now. And then just before my turn to go up, in my mind I was thinking, well, this is it. If you take initiation, that's it. So if you're gonna go, you gotta go now. Like leave. If you're gonna leave, you gotta leave now. But I didn't. I went up. I took initiation. I got my beads. Actually, I got a different name. I got Murari Krishna when I got initiated. But then after the ceremony, the temple president called me and this other brahmachari up, and they said, "You two have to switch names. They got your names mixed up." Then it's when I got Mukta Vandya. But anyway, the thing is, I know exactly what this is, because I was exactly the same. We're coming out of conditioned life for millions of births and deaths. And the essence of conditioned life is that we don't want to surrender. We want to maintain our independence. We want to think that I'm independent. I'm not under anybody's authority, at least not absolutely. Of course, I have to accept the authority of the government. I have to accept the authority of the teachers and my mother and father. But actually, I don't want to be under anyone's absolute authority, where I'm really, really obliged to follow their instructions. And not just for a few minutes or for an hour or for a few years, but birth after birth. He is my Lord, birth after birth, and eternally. So that's a huge, huge step. But that's the essence of, that's what it means to take initiation from the disciple side. From the spiritual master side, it means that he accepts the responsibility eternally of guiding this conditioned soul back to Krishna, back home, back to Godhead. So in the beginning, so many, there were, anyway, I'll go on to the Bhagavatam now. And then I'll tell you, this is kind of funny. When we were in New York, there was about five of us traveling. We went down there, like four brahmacharis, and we all took initiation, or three of us took initiation. And the temple president, who was a brahmachari too, he was the leader of the... We went down in a van, and when we came back, they had, you know, the devotees in the temple, they had learned our initiated names. So there's this one devotee cooking in the kitchen. We came in the back door, there's a devotee cooking in the kitchen. He was an older devotee, you know, 5 or 6 years, that's old devotee. And he was really good, and he had been my authority a lot, head of the kitchen. I was in the kitchen a lot. And I really liked him, he liked me, and I respected him a lot. And when I came in the back door, he goes, I stopped by the kitchen, he was cooking there, and he goes, "Oh, Mukta Vandya, great soul." And I was thinking, I said, "Oh yes, great soul, he has recognized me." And then he saw the look on my face, he knew what I was thinking. And then he goes, "Okay, now get upstairs and take a shower and get down here and wash the pots." So I was like, recognize you're a great soul because you're accepted into the Sampradaya, and it's a glorious thing. You're considered a great soul. You're accepted. But still, you're the little kid. You're the neophyte. So don't think that you're advanced or anything special just because you took initiation. Good. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 9. This is a chapter summary at the beginning. The Supreme Character of Jad Bharat. In this chapter, Bharata Maharaja's attainment of the body of a Brahmin is described. In this body, he remained like one dull, deaf, and dumb, so much so that when he was brought before the goddess Kali to be killed as a sacrifice, he never protested but remained silent. After having given up the body of a deer, he took birth in the womb of the youngest wife of a Brahmin. In this life, he could also remember the activities of his past life. And in order to avoid the influence of society, he remained like a deaf and dumb person. He was very careful not to fall down again. He did not mix with anyone who was not a devotee. This process should be adopted by every devotee. As advised by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, asat sangatyag e vaishnav achar. One should strictly avoid the company of non-devotees, even though they may be family members. When Bharata Maharaj was in the body of a Brahmin, the people in the neighborhood thought of him as a crazy, dull fellow. But within, he was always chanting and remembering Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although his father wanted to give him an education and purify him as a Brahmin by offering the sacred thread, he remained in such a way that his father and mother could understand that he was crazy and not interested in the reformatory method. Nonetheless, he remained fully Krishna conscious, even without undergoing such official ceremonies. Due to his silence, some people who were no better than animals began to tease him in many ways, but he tolerated this. After the death of his father and mother, his stepmother and stepbrothers began to treat him very poorly. They would give him the most condemned food, but still he did not mind. They would give him, he remained completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. He was ordered by his stepbrothers and mother to guard a paddy field one night, and at that time the leader of a dacoit party took him away and tried to kill him by offering him as a sacrifice before Bhadrakali. When the dacoits brought Bharata Maharaj before the goddess Kali and raised a chopper to kill him, the goddess Kali became immediately alarmed due to the mistreatment of a devotee. She came out of the deity and, taking the chopper in her own hands, killed all the dacoits there. Thus, a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can remain silent despite the mistreatment of non-devotees. Rogues and dacoits who misbehave toward a devotee are punished at last by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the first verse, very long. No meter, I'll read it through. If anyone else wants to read it through, they can. Shishuka uvacha atakasya chidrijava varasyangira pravarasya shamadama tapa swadhya yadjayana jaga santosha tiksha prashraya vidya nasuyatma jnana nanda yuktasyatma sadrisha shutta Shilachara Rupa Rupodarya Guna Nava Sodarya Angaja Babhuvor Mitunam Chayavi Yasyam Varyayam Yas Varyayam Yastu Tatra Pumangstang Parama Bhagavatam Rajarshi Pravaram Bharatam Utsri Mriga shariram charama shirirena vipratvam gatam ahu. Does anyone else like to read? If not, I will progress to the translation. Srila Shukadev Goswami continued, "My dear king, after giving up the body of a deer, Bharata Maharaj took birth in a very pure Brahmin family. There was a Brahmin who belonged to the dynasty of Angira. He was fully qualified with brahminical qualifications. He could control his mind and senses, and he had studied the Vedic literatures and other subsidiary literatures. He was expert in giving charity, and he was always satisfied, tolerant, very gentle, learned, and non-envious. He was self-realized and engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. He remained always in a trance. He had 9 equally qualified sons by his first wife, and by his second wife he begot twins, a brother and a sister, of which the male child was said to be the topmost devotee and foremost of saintly kings, Bharata Maharaj. This then is the story of the birth he took after giving up the body of a deer. Prabhupada's purport. Bharata Maharaj was a great devotee, but he did not attain success in one life. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that a devotee who does not fulfill his devotional duties in one life is given the chance to be born in a fully qualified Brahmin family or a rich Kshatriya or Vaishya family. Shuchinam Shimatam Gehe, Bhagavad Gita 6:41. Bharata Maharaj was the firstborn son of Maharaj Rishab in a rich Kshatriya family. But due to his willful negligence of his spiritual duties and his excessive attachment to an insignificant deer, he was obliged to take birth as the son of a deer. However, due to his strong position as a devotee, he was gifted with the remembrance of his past life. Being repentant, he remained in a solitary forest and always thought of Krishna. Then he was given the chance to take birth in a very good Brahmin family. Om again to Miranda Sagan and Janashalakaya Chakshu and Militam Yena Tasmaya Sri Gurave Namaha. So Prabhupada begins by saying, Bharata Maharaj was a great devotee, but he did not attain success in one life. So very frequently in Prabhupada's lectures and purports and in his teachings, he would say very, very directly, very bluntly, very clearly, that he would end many of his lectures saying, and so we should all be happy, chant Hare Krishna, serve Krishna, and go back home, back to Godhead. And he named his magazine, Back to Godhead magazine. And that was in India, when he first was in India and started his first publication was Back to Godhead, an English publication of about, I think, four pages that he tried to produce monthly. He produced as often as possible for a period. Then he didn't for a while when he couldn't do it, and then he started. And when he came to the United States, one of his first projects, when some of his disciples became serious, he took initiation and became very serious, one of the first things he wanted done was to restart the Back to Godhead magazine. And the picture, the top of the magazine, the logo is Prabhupada in a circle of light. At the lower left corner, and there's new devotees around him who are still in darkness, and they're all pointing up to the upper right-hand corner of the logo where Lord Chaitanya is very, you know, brilliantly effulgent, and he's dancing with his arms raised. And underneath is written, Nescience, dark, let's see, illusion. I can never get it quite straight, but it's actually comes from directly from a verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. God, Maya is darkness, Godhead is light. Where there is Godhead, there is no darkness. Not sure if that's exactly how it goes, but that's the sense of it, and so that's the logo. So Prabhupada, that's the preaching of the Hare Krishna movement. It's not that we're trying to become Brahmins or that we're, you know, expert Brahmins, although that we should become brahminical as time goes on. We should become more in the mode of goodness, more brahminical. We should become learned in the shastras to some degree. We don't have to become experts in Sanskrit, but we should be able to pronounce everything, and we should gradually learn vocabulary, and we should become somewhat familiar, and we will naturally over the course of time. But the goal is not to become like an expert musician and play the drum or the harmonium perfectly or anything like that. The goal, those things all may come to a devotee, but depending on their tendencies and their natural abilities, or of course, so many devotees, like this is one really good example that I like to use in the beginning, like Mother Jadarani. She was one of the first disciples, and she had some inclination towards art. I think she was an art student, and but her paintings in the beginning, one of the first things Prabhupada had her do was paint pictures of Krishna. But her paintings in the beginning weren't very expert. They were, you know, if you look in the original pictures of the Krishna book or the Bhagavad Gita, you see that, you know, the paintings are wonderful. They're paintings of Krishna and they're really nice, but they're relatively crude artistically. And so she was like that in the beginning, as were so many other artists. But just by painting Krishna repeatedly day after day, year after year, and under Prabhupada's direct instructions, she would ask him questions: how should Krishna look in this painting? How should Mother Yashoda look? How should I paint this? How should I paint that? And Prabhupada would give her very specific instructions, and other artists too. But she was the first one. And over the course of time, you see that she became such an incredibly, incredible artist. The pictures of Krishna 10 years later, 20 or 30 years later, 50 years later. I'm not even sure if she's still painting or not, but, but her paintings became so just technically and artistically, you know, really, really expert. Because she was a sincere devotee painting under Prabhupada's instructions, and Krishna gave her the talent, the ability. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "I am the ability in man." So whatever ability we have, it comes from Krishna. So if Krishna, it's like some kid is born, and by the time he's 5 years old, he can play he's a concert pianist. And I heard, I saw Pavarotti's granddaughter singing, somebody put on YouTube, and she's 11 years old, and she's incredible, sings opera like a 30-year-old woman. She's 11, so that's called gifted. When somebody gifted means there's a gift giver, and we commonly say someone is a gifted artist or a gifted athlete, but the gift means there's a gift giver. And the gift giver is Krishna. So anyone who's sincere and works sincerely in the service of Guru and Krishna will naturally become better and better at whatever they're doing. But in and of itself, it's not a goal to become expert in any particular discipline or art. There's another example where one artist, early artist, asked Prabhupada, she wanted to, I'm not sure, I don't know if it was Mother Jadarani or somebody, another one, but they asked Prabhupada if she should go to art college and study art. And Prabhupada didn't like it. He said, no, he said, don't go to, just take, you know, we've been in this material world so many lives, you've learned so many things, you've studied this and studied that. Now you're surrendered to Krishna. So just take whatever you already know, whatever talents you already have, and use them in Krishna's service, and that will be sufficient. Of course, nowadays the preaching mostly is, you know, stay in school, study, do what you're going to do, and that's the common preaching this day and age. But I'm just expressing my own opinion, which is based in history, historical fact, that it's really not necessary Anyway, I'm getting way off the track, but that's an opinion that I sometimes express. And the Prabhupada said, Bharata Maharaj was a great devotee, but he did not attain... in this one life, I was watching one video of Prabhupada. I really liked this one. It was in like 1972 in Australia, and one of the lady devotees at the end of a lecture asked Prabhupada, she said, it seems like, is it really something like, is it really possible to go back to Godhead in one life, at the end of one life? And Prabhupada said, immediately, he said, he didn't hesitate a second. As soon as she finished her question, he immediately said, why one life? In 1 second, you can surrender to Krishna and become completely pure. And he said that frequently throughout his lectures and purports. And he gives the example of King Kulashekar, who was a king, and he, I forget the whole story, but he somehow got the news or got the information from a higher source, from demigods or something. He wanted to know, he was at the height of his power and his opulence, he was a king, and everything was good. Everything seemed was good. And but somehow he got some benediction that he could know when he was going to leave his body. And he found out that it was going to be in a minute or in a few minutes or something like that. It's going to be really soon. And so he has this one prayer that Prabhupada often recited and sang. Krishna, it starts, I don't know if I can remember the whole thing, but Krishna Tudiya Parapankaja Panjarantam Adeva Vishatu Me Manasaraja Hansa Prana Prana Sami Kapapata Pito can't remember the last line. But the verses, he says, and now that I'm close to death, let me die immediately, but let me have my mind encircled or entwined in the stems in your lotus feet, just as a swan entwines its head and neck in the stems underwater of the lotus flower. And he says, otherwise, if I don't leave my body now while I'm thinking of you, I might leave my body sometime. If I'm old or sick and my throat is choked up and I can hardly breathe and I might not be able to think about you, about Krishna. So let me leave my body immediately. And Prabhupada gives that frequently as an example of someone who immediately surrendered to Krishna. And so it is possible. We're very reluctant to surrender to Krishna completely, as in the previous example, because of this long time of trying to avoid surrendering to Krishna and trying to remain independent. But it remains the only logical thing to do, because we are eternally parts and parcels of Krishna. So it's like if you're like Dr. Spock or Mr. Spock, not Dr. Spock. Dr. Spock was a baby doctor like in the 40s and 50s. And he wrote books about it. He became very famous. My mother and father followed Dr. Spock. But Mr. Spock was like, well, that is not logical, Jim. And everything had to be logical. So if you're like that, if you really like that, and Krishna Das Kaviraj says that in the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said, if you're logical and you think everything has to be proved logically like that, and just apply your intelligence to the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and if you do, you'll find it to be strikingly wonderful. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami said it, and Prabhupada, all the disciples, you can, like we were talking about last night in class, you can use all your intelligence and all your arguments and to understand and probe every mystery, thing you don't understand in Krishna consciousness, and that's good. But you can also just immediately accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and I'm his eternal servitor and surrender immediately. And that's good too. They're both good. The point is that to come to the point of logically surrendering to Krishna. Okay, so I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Okay, where is Srila Prabhupada?